So, let's just start with the basics, and why don't you tell us a little bit about the solitary gardens? All right, sorry, a little technical difficulty. Is that better?
Let's see. Yeah, I can hear myself now.
All right, so we are in the studio with Jackie Summel. Thank you for coming to speak to us about the Solitary Gardens Project. Why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about it?
Well, good morning, Javi. I'm really honored to be here. And before I talk about any of my work, I wanted to talk a little bit about our connection and just honor and hold the space for Walimu, your grandfather and one of my elders, who remains a great inspiration for any of the work that I do in this lifetime. Who, as you know, and as many in New Orleans know, recently joined the ancestors. Your grandfather was an incredible man and remains an incredible inspiration to so many of us. So, for me, this kind of work is a way to honor legacies like your grandfather and Herman Wallace and those that are still amongst us, like Albert Wood Fox and Kenny Zulu Whitmore and Tajiri Askari, Tajana, who is out in Pelican Bay. And all of them are great men who were forced to endure the inhumane conditions of solitary confinement in the United States. And for those who don't know, solitary confinement is a mechanism of punishment that has been considered cruel and unusual by many, many international watchdogs, including Juan Mendez, who is the UN Rapporteur on Torture, who stated that any length of time in solitary confinement over 15 days is actually cruel and unusual, which is allegedly a protection of the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution of the United States. So solitary confinement is any mechanism of isolation that forces human beings, men, women, and children, to endure isolation a minimum of 23 hours a day. One of the conditions in the United States is there's no statute of limitations. There's no statute that says, as of yet, there are some legislation within California and New York that will limit the duration that you can spend in solitary confinement. But one of the great issues is that it's indefinite. And so you may spend upwards of four decades in solitary confinement, as we've seen in the cases of the Angola Three, Herman Wallace, Albert Wood Fox, and Robert King. Actually, Robert King was my introduction to the whole world of solitary confinement. I met him over 15 years ago. He came to San Francisco where I was a young grad student, and he had been exonerated and released from Angola prison here in Louisiana after spending 29 years in solitary confinement for a crime he couldn't have possibly committed. For me, that day was really remarkable and significant in terms of my own political reorientation, because there I was, this grad student at this university called Stanford, on a full ride with stipend in this very privileged bubble. And this person that I had a crush on invited me to see King speak. He was organizing King's lecture at this space called the Luggage Store Gallery. And I had never heard of solitary confinement 15 years ago. Very few people had. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know who Robert King was. And I'd be darned if I even knew anything about Louisiana, right? Except Napoleon has something to do with it, you know? So for me, it was a very privileged existence. And so I remember riding my bicycle to see him speak, again, just because I had a crush on the organizer. And I got cut off by an SUV on Market Street in San Francisco. And I threw my bicycle down and was going to go fisticuffs with this anonymous driver. You know, I was so full of anger and rage, mm-hmm. and youthful ignorance. And that was my solution to that kind of contention. And I just remember being like, you gas guzzling MF, blah, 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 blah. And then I walked up the stairs of the luggage store and reapplied my makeup and sat in front of this man who spent 29 years in solitary confinement for a crime he couldn't have possibly committed. 29 years, longer than I had been alive at the time, in a 6-foot by 9-foot cell for a minimum of 23 hours a day. and he wasn't angry. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I have something to learn from that human being, you know?
Yeah.
And so it was this very strong magnetism or very strong reorientation towards the gift of wisdom and transformation and the ability to learn from those who have endured the impossible. And so that was my introduction to this world. And, you know, 15 years later, 15 years of working with these incredible human beings, we've come to this position where I'm working on a project called the Solitary Gardens here in New Orleans, as you mentioned, and thank you very much for mentioning it. And the Solitary Gardens is an offshoot of a project called Herman's House, which if you grace me the space, I'll talk a little about. Herman Wallace, as many of us know, spent 41 years in solitary confinement for a crime he couldn't have possibly committed. He was released on October 1st, 2013, and he joined the ancestors on October 4th, 2013. So he had 3 days of so-called freedom, plagued by the late stages of liver cancer. I met him shortly after my introduction to Robert King. In fact, at the end of that lecture, most of the 11 young people in that audience were made silent by the reality of King's recent history. And at the end, he said, "Does anyone have any questions?" And nobody could speak or move. We were paralyzed in disbelief, like suspended in disbelief that this exists, you know? Even the introduction to Angola prison as a former slave plantation named for the place in Africa where the most profitable slaves came from, and this idea that the blueprint or the economic and physical paradigm of that kind of chattel slavery still existed. Then it was 2001, but 2015 going into 2016, we're still looking at 18,000 acres of farmland that is manned by predominantly black bodies, forced to work for 2 to 20 cents an hour, a minimum of 40 hours a week. And so again, we're still looking at the profitable blueprints of chattel slavery in the United States, in the state of Louisiana, wherever you go, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's a terrifying reality and daunting task to want to abolish prisons. So backtracking to that moment at the end of that lecture, nobody could speak, and I just found the awkward courage to raise my hand and say, what can we do? And King said, "Write my comrades, write Herman Wallace and Albert Woodfox." And that began a very unexpected journey for me, where over the course of 12 years, I collaborated with Herman to design his dream home with the intention of building it here in Louisiana, in New Orleans, where Herman grew up. And the idea of this, behind this collaboration, was simply to relieve or assuage Herman of some of his suffering. At the time I was introduced to him, he was in the dungeon in Angola, which is even more punitive than solitary, or what they call CCR, closed cell restriction. And the dungeon has less general privileges, less visiting, less phone calls. You can have one ballpoint pen, a certain number of pieces of paper, one book. There's no natural light for extended periods within the dungeon. He was forced to wear only his boxers and no socks. He also, when you're in the dungeon or Camp J in Angola, which is a prison again here in Louisiana, for all of you voting, tax-paying individuals who are listening, when you're in the dungeon, you are forced to eat something they call the loaf, which is the leftovers from the day before that are packed into this sort of extended bread loaf, although you don't know what it is. You don't know what food scraps you are eating. And for those of us who have allergies or religious aversions to particular foods, you are consuming whatever was left over in this unknown sort of slice. And so it's just a continued mechanism of torture. And this is the space that I met Herman. And he was really suffering. And there was this juxtaposition of my privilege being at Stanford on a full ride with stipend to make art, and this man that was kept in a dungeon. And I realized I had to do something. And again, you know, I, like many people, felt very powerless. Like there I was, this young artist engaging in an unknown abyss, told that my particular path and measure of success was determined by how many exhibitions I had and how much recognition I had, and how much artwork I could sell, and all of these false paradigms. And then I'm communicating with this man who's telling me that my value, all of my value, is measured by how much compassion I can extend towards others. And I do believe that to be true. It's the same message I received from your grandfather and from Robert King and from Albert Woodfox and Malik Rahim and Norris Henderson and all of these, what I consider superheroes amongst men. And so I knew that my mechanism of survival, my ability to survive the seemingly impossible, was fueled by my imagination and my creativity. And so I created this little game between Herman and I where I asked him to dream of a home. And never intending or planning or dreaming that this project would grow wings and become this international exhibition and book and eventually a documentary film that won an Emmy last year. And the voice for Herman Wallace in so many ways, and the voice for those forced to endure the cruel and unusual conditions of solitary confinement. It was very unexpected. And so Herman and I collaborated on that project lovingly for 12 years. And in the wake of his passing, I was sort of left with a lot of questions. What do I do now? You know, do I still build Herman's house? And the answer is yes. In the meantime, there's a lot of things that need to take place and transcend. And Herman's great wish was that the focus becomes the abolition of solitary confinement. And so one of the mechanisms that I'm using is this project, the Solitary Gardens. And the Solitary Gardens are... it's a park that is in the Lower Ninth Ward. We were given two lots on a two-year lease through the New Orleans Redevelopment Agency to develop and activate a space dedicated to prison abolition and the abolition of solitary confinement. The space itself will look like a traditional park with gardens and garden beds. And the unique feature of it is that the garden beds are the same blueprint as solitary cells. So they're 6 foot by 9 foot. The only space where you can grow plants is the space where a human being is able to move. So very often in those spaces, or I would argue always, in isolation cells, the desks and chairs and beds are welded or are a part of the concrete wall. Sometimes they're made out of poured concrete themselves. And so you actually have less real estate within the cell than that actual 6 by 9 blueprint. And so we created garden beds that are mimicking that experience, same shape and size. And then they will be co-created by individuals who are serving long-term solitary confinement and volunteers like myself, yourself, schools, universities, etc., on the outside. Okay. And they exist like little baby Herman houses. So the garden beds themselves will become portraits of the human being that has been dehumanized by our collective and individual addictions to punishment.
Absolutely. So I imagine that these garden beds will have some sort of healing value for the prisoners that they represent.
That is my hope. For me, you know, there's been I'm very, very, very grateful. There's been an incredible response to Herman's house and the house that Herman built my project. And it's been celebrated in many traditional venues and journals and news sources. And as I said, the film itself won an Emmy. And that's fantastic. But I think that the greatest reward or the greatest accolade that I would acknowledge with the project is the fact that Herman Wallace was able to transcend the walls of his cell through his home, through the process of dreaming. And in some ways, I was able to gift this man respite from the inhumane and the unimaginable. And that is the greatest thing that this project did. And if I can extend some of that intention through these garden beds to a number of the 80,000 men, women, or children who are forced to endure solitary confinement, then that would be the greatest reward.
Absolutely. And is there anything that the community can do to interact with this project and sort of participate in, like, the process of retribution that you're seeking?
Yeah, I mean, so the answer is yes. We are in the nascent stages of building the park itself.
Okay.
We are always looking for folks and volunteers who would be interested in volunteering and hosting a bed themselves. The beds will be component-based, and the idea is that if you yourself will build a 6x9 frame, then we will have the components to lay on top so that it illustrates the prison cell itself. So we'll have the gate at the front and the blueprint on top, and of no cost to you, other than the fact that you will contribute to the betterment of someone's life, you can host one of these beds. There'll be an online platform at solitarygardens.org, which will also illustrate portraits of the human being. The intention is to rehumanize folks that are incarcerated, to counteract the intentions of the prison industrial complex, which is to dehumanize in some little way, shape, or form through this project. We are also looking for individuals who would be interested in developing curriculum surrounding not only anti-solitary work, but prison abolition work, which is at the root of this project. I'm a prison abolitionist and believe that we can exist in a world without prisons, and we can visualize a landscape without prisons. And the idea is to encourage folks through traditional and non-traditional curriculum to do the same.
Okay, absolutely. For those of you tuning in right now, you're listening to WTUL New Orleans 91.5 FM. This is your News and Views program, and we are currently doing an interview with Jackie Summel. So the follow-up question that kind of pulls us away from the project, but more behind the philosophy of it, is why have you spent the past 15 years focusing mainly on solitary confinement rather than, you know, other issues with the prison industrial complex?
It's a good question. I mean, there's so many issues when you're looking at mass incarceration.
Definitely.
And, you know, 2.5 million people incarcerated at any given moment in the United States, 13 million people going in and out of prison jails and detention centers on any given day, 8 million people, predominantly brown and black bodies, that are under some form of correctional control. When you're looking at things like capital punishment, when you're looking at the way we incarcerate children in the United States, why solitary confinement? For me, it was a non-intentional choice. It was through this meeting of those remarkable human beings that I mentioned, Herman Wallace, Albert Wood Fox, and Robert King, that made an indelible impression in my own personal and political bodies. I do think that the more that I worked with them, the more I understood the mechanisms of punishment and control, the more important I felt it was to target solitary confinement. Mm-hmm. And I think if we look at, again, our collective addiction to punishment, the reasons why we have and maintain the largest prison system in the world, which are all rooted in capitalism. If we look at how folks who are well-minded, who are compassionate, who are decent human beings, how they are participating complicitly or explicitly in mass incarceration, part of that is purely based in ignorance. And part of that is based in the fact that we have been rooted in systems of retribution and this addiction to punishment, and arguably the most concentrated form of that punishment is solitary confinement. And in some ways, I believe that if we can abolish solitary confinement, if we use that as the target to illustrate our collective addiction of punishment, then we can abolish prisons. We can live in a world that doesn't rely on prisons to resolve the so-called crimes of our society, which generally, for the most part, are rooted in poverty. And again, if you trace that back, you're looking at a history of consumer capitalism and capitalist control.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm really interested in this idea you have, you've been talking about, of compassion really being at the root of it all, and the role it's playing in, like, this forgiveness, you know, that we ultimately, like, have to come to abolish these systems. Definitely. Is there a way that, do you see, on a smaller scale, people being able to implement that into other ways of moving toward this bigger goal?
Yeah, I think it's a beautiful, again, question. It's because I think when I say I'm a prison abolitionist, the first question is, what do you do with all the murderers and rapists? Right. You know, and I would say in the long term, we create a society where the number of murders and rapes are greatly decreased because individually we have all a collective, we have individually become more compassionate, more aware. There's an equality amongst us, not only in our capital value, but in our individual sense of value and our desire to uphold each other. That is a mechanism that will decarcerate in and of itself, and that will undermine any of these so-called crimes that are generated by disparities and by poverty. But I also believe that, you know, this idea of the individual intention of being more forgiving and more compassionate is at the root of prison abolition. So for me, on a very personal level, the number of times that I have felt wrong, these microaggressions that we experience every day in our lives, like getting cut off in traffic, and then holding the space to be angry at that person who intentionally or unintentionally did it. It's like holding a coal, right, that only burns myself and wishing that they would suffer, you know, and me wanting them to suffer. And how that contributes to the collective desire to suffer. And so you asked me, how can we as individuals start to shift our own perspectives, maybe with the intention of abolishing prisons and maybe not, maybe just the intention of suffering a little bit less for the years to come and the and the precious days that we have left on this planet. And I think it's important to look at the way we respond to those micro and macro aggressions. You know, if our hearts are broken and we want our former lovers and people that we thought were magnificent just a few hours before to suffer. You know, if someone in our family that we hold near and dear does something that that doesn't feel right and we want them to suffer. And so it begins with identifying that as a habit or a pattern and then committing oneself to changing it.
Great. That was beautiful. Thank you. So we are coming to the end of our interview. Would you like to tell the listeners a few ways they could find out more about the project and maybe get in touch with anyone if they have more questions?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to have a very small and sacred ground blessing ceremony with Mama Sula, who runs the King and Queen Emporium. She's a healer in town, a really magnificent human being and close friend of your grandfather's. And so she's going to bless the space this Sunday, January 3rd at 1 p.m. Anyone is welcome to come. We're asking for the ancestors to join us in this collective process of healing. We're asking for the ancestors to bless the space so that it becomes this contemplative space where people engage in anti-prison and anti-solitary movements, where people don't feel powerless with their own voices and their own individual actions. And so anyone is welcome to join us there. Again, it's this Sunday at 1 p.m. We'll plant some trees. We'll participate in sacred prayer. And we'll just enjoy the healing qualities of Mama Sula. If anyone is interested in being part of the project as a whole, you can contact us at info@solitarygardens.org, info@solitarygardens.org. My project with Herman Wallace has been documented at hermanshouse.org. You can also, you can see the film, I think, on iTunes, but it's on iTunes or YouTube. And it's, again, called Herman's House. It's a little bit dated at this point, and there's, like, some gaping wounds that I have with the film itself, and also, I think, in the story that it tells. I do feel like the story of Herman is not necessarily ignored, but intentionally occluded by the life of the project, with the hope that people will be inspired to do their own research. There's so much information out there. I also want to give a shout out to Solitary Watch. If you guys are curious, or any of the listeners are curious about the history of solitary confinement, solitarywatch.com is an incredible resource. There's also incarceratednation.org, where you can find more information about the prison industrial complex, how to engage, get involved, and participate in a society that decarcerates rather than incarcerates, in a society that is motivated by the qualities of compassion and forgiveness rather than the desire to punish or retribute.
Great, thank you. Thank you. And thank you for that amazing interview. I hope to see some of the listeners out at the ground blessing this Sunday at 1 p.m.
At 1 p.m.
And what is the address?
Oh, thank you. Good question. 2600 Andry Street. So it's on the corner of Andry and Law in the lower Ninth Ward. It's across the street from MLK High School, which is the largest high school being built in New Orleans. And if there's any listeners out there that will be part of MLK High School teaching or an administrator, please reach out to me. We want to collaborate with you. We want to work directly with you. And we want to ensure that that we are collectively part of the process of abolishing prisons.
Thank you so much, Jackie.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right.